Today on The Breakdown, it's a whole swirl of data that I am going to throw at you about a very particular poker hand that just happened with huge money implications. Here's some of that data right now. Over 8,000 people played in this $1,000 World Series of Poker buy-in. Over 8,000, man. First place, like $750,000. And how many players are left? Oh, there's nine. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah. And here's the really cool thing. For nearly a decade now, Grant and I have talked about this mythical beast, this unicorn, this centaur called the play. It's something that you almost never see in the wild. And yet, perhaps the nature photographers may have captured this on camera? Yeah, on camera, on stream, baby. Because, well, Dan Heimuller, who's like old school pro-y famous guy, sort of, and Ron Fesch are going to play a hand where one of them is going to make the play. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Nelly, it's something else. And if you do know what I'm talking about, stick around anyway, because we're going to break it all down right now in The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey, my Cracker Barrel coupon.
I didn't even mention this part of it.
Where is it, Sonny? My Cracker Barrel coupon that was good for 5% off any purchase of $28 or more, Sonny.
I mean, that's pretty good. It's $1.40 at least.
Oh, and they have potatoes.
I love potatoes.
Mushy, so I can chew them with my dentures.
So this is because this is the seniors event.
Oh.
In case that wasn't clear. And the seniors event, to be clear, is 50 years or older. So it's...
So that's
it's
exactly
like middle age event.
I was doing an impression of Jonathan just now.
Exactly. Yeah. I like my crackers and I like my barrels.
Why would I buy batteries when they just let me take them from the store?
What? That's
seniors notoriously steal batteries.
Notorious shoplifters.
They for batteries. Yeah.
For batteries specifically.
Yeah. Somebody will back me up on this.
I'm sure someone will.
Yeah.
Some senior hating Twitter user.
No, it's a societal menace, seniors stealing batteries.
I think.
Imagine how far electric vehicles could have come without the aged ones taking all of our batteries.
Take it out of the cars?
They'll take them from wherever they can get them.
It's a whole thing to take a battery out of like a Prius though, right?
Yeah, I mean, once it's not the World Series of Poker seniors. It's the seniors like as defined by the United States Social Security system.
Mm.
But once you reach that level, I think you immediately gain some new skills about how to remove a Tesla battery.
Steal shit.
Yeah.
So it's like 65 or older.
Yeah.
Those things are heavy, right?
Not if you know how to use a rope and pulley system, which you should have learned in 1941 in high school.
And you know what every single person 65 years or older in America is going to say? You got to bend your knees when you lift. Lift with your knees, not with your back.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to say. Well, and that's how you lift the battery without hurting yourself.
It's good advice.
It's very important, actually.
Yeah.
But that's what they're going to say.
It is what they're going to say.
I mean, I feel like that's a mental thing more than anything else. Lift with your knees.
Yeah, yeah. I think
like, what am I thinking about as I lift?
Everybody listening should lift with your back. It's a great idea.
I mean, no. Just try lifting with some other thing. Lift with your heels of your fucking toes. See how that goes. The heels of your toes. That's like the back end of your toe.
The part where it connects to the foot.
Exactly. On the bottom. The heel of your toe. That's pretty straightforward, Grant.
Yeah.
Or just your heels. Lift from there. See how that goes. It's going to be the same. You know why? Because it's all just in your fucking brain. This is another manipulative move by the elderly of this country to confuse us.
Right. Right.
And it's working. It's working too well.
Mind over body.
Disinformation.
Huh?
See, they play, oh, I'm just going to share this thing on Facebook about how Atlantis exists and, you know, they're all going to kill us. Really, that's a false flag operation by these elderlies.
Yeah, it's a honeypot.
Let's say other spy terms, or military terms.
Gun.
Right? That's good. That's a good one. Espionage.
Oh,
espionage.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Double agent. Triple agent.
Don't say that. Don't say that on a podcast.
Okay.
You know what happens.
It gets so confusing once you go triple agent, I think.
At a certain point, you don't even know.
Yeah. You're like, I'm on one of the sides.
Or both.
Yeah.
Or three. I'm not sure.
The good news is you get to, whichever side wins, you can sort of claim you were with them. But also, they might, no one might trust you eventually, especially once you go quadruple agent, right? Because now everyone knows you're lying. You're pretending to be on both sides once you go quadruple.
You've got to find a way to mimic, like, astrology speak so that it can apply to everybody. Hmm. You know, that's the whole astrology playbook. Like,
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
This thing that defines almost everybody is specific to you, person who was born in this swath of time.
Right. And how does that, you're saying, so whichever side you're talking to,
you could be like, I always thought the good side was going to win.
Yeah.
You know, the side with all of the merit and the values that I agree with.
All right. Here's my question to you. In all of human history, okay, and you have to get this right.
I have to, or what happens?
There's going to be physical consequences to yourself.
All right.
There'll be harm.
Okay.
Okay. What is the...
What's the scale of the harm? I have to know before I start.
It's not too bad. It's somewhere between... It's like finger harm. So, like, the worst thing I'm going to do is either pull off one of your nails or, like, cut off the finger itself, or just a part of it.
That doesn't sound great.
Just the nib.
I don't
just
like
the nub.
I don't like. Okay, so it's worth avoiding.
You don't want it.
Yeah,
but it's not going to be like, and then I was dead. You know, like you won't be able to, or like, oh no, I can't even like drive anymore. You can't really complain about it.
I can't. I'm not allowed to. Okay.
Okay. So, in all of human history, and it's mostly with spies, I guess it'd be what's the most level of agent someone's ever been? So there's double agent, triple agent. I'm sure at some point someone's been a quadruple agent. How high has it gone?
So let's define how this would occur.
Oh my God, this is
so single agent is obvious. You're like, I work for this government.
I work for this government, but I'm spying for this government. So I work for this government, but I'm pretending to be something else.
All right, so you're in country A. And you work for country B.
Yes.
And you're in country A pretending to be something else.
Yes. That's
in order to gain information.
I'm an agent.
From country A.
That's agent. That's an agent.
Right. Okay. And then a double agent is you're actually working for country A, feeding false information to country B.
No, that's not a double agent.
It's not?
A double agent is I'm working for country A and I'm pretending to be something in country B, but now the information I'm feeding back to country A is false.
Now
my original employer is the one I'm betraying. I'm a double agent.
I think you maybe got caught up and wrong. And I think I was right.
You're not.
Because I initially said, I work for country B, I'm in country A.
No, you said it the other way.
No, I didn't. If you rewind the damn tape.
Rewind the tape, you're wrong, but who cares? Go on.
I'm so excited for this to come out. Because I'm pretty sure I'm right on this one. You sounded so arrogant.
Anyway, let's go.
Okay, whatever.
So we're saying the same thing? Is that what
you're
getting
to? Yes,
we are. Okay. So like you're like a single agent is I'm in country B, but I've been hired by country A, which is what I remember you saying.
Nope,
by the way.
I said I'm in country A, but I was hired by country B.
Oh, well, if that's what you said, fine. And then you're saying, now I'm actually feeding false information to country B, right?
Yes. Okay. Because I actually,
so that's a double
because
agent.
Because I actually work for country A.
Right. I now actually, right. That's double agent. Okay, fair enough.
And then a triple agent is what?
Triple agent is country B, who originally hired me to work in country A, but now I've been flipped by country A to give false information to country B. Country B knows I'm doing this and is in league with me on this. And I've told them that I've been flipped. And now they're like, good, go along with that. Let them think they're feeding us false information. You tell us the real thing. And now we'll show them stuff. So that's a triple agent.
But you're feeding information to Country B. So how does that benefit Country B?
Well, because Country B? You're giving them false information. You're telling them two things. You're telling them the real thing, and you're also telling them what you're supposed to tell them. And then they get to decide what they want to do with that.
What I'm saying is your original employer was country B,
right?
And then you double agented where you're feeding country B false information from country A.
Right.
But now you're a triple agent, so you're actually working for country B.
Yeah.
How does that benefit country B if you're just feeding country B false information from country A, and that's all country A sees you doing?
Okay.
Yeah.
Multiple ways. Number one, country A starts to trust you and lets you in, and now you have an opportunity to fuck things up on the inside.
Yeah, that's the good one. Yeah.
Also, country A now believes country B thinks things about them that they don't actually think. It's like the Enigma machine.
Yeah.
And now country B gets to decide how often they reveal that they know something or not, but that's very powerful. And if you leverage that right, you can win a world war. In fact, we've seen it happen.
All
right,
so how does quadruple work then?
Well, very clearly. Country A figures out that this whole thing we've just been talking about has been happening and talks you into, like, you know, gets you to fall in love or re-fall in love or whatever, or pays you more money or whatever it is, but gets you to now have country B think you're this triple agent when in fact country A knows what's really going on and you are ultimately in league with them. And so now you might be feeding them some real things, you might be feeding them some false things, but it's ultimately all now country A understands all exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's like whichever country really understands what's really happening is the one in charge, and then that's you just keep going levels past that. So you could get to like a... I mean, how many levels has it ever gone?
Well, yeah. I think there's a semantic issue here. I think it's the most you can be is a double agent.
Or a triple agent.
No, I think the most you can be is a double agent, but it just depends on what side you're on at that point.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Okay, that's one way. Okay, but having said that, and that's fair, how many times, though, how many layers of this has ever actually happened where someone went somewhere, got turned, went, you know, started giving the, and then got turned again, and they got turned back
Can't
and forth.
Can't be higher than, like, six.
Feels like six has got to be even, maybe even the most, but all of human history, it's probably happened at least once, right?
Well, I mean, especially at times when there was not instant communication, like, between, like, the Abyssinians and the Egyptians or something, where like you take like a 4-month travel between the empires back and forth every once in a while, you get flipped every time.
Yeah, yeah, you know, maybe, like, maybe. The thing is though, only you would know as the agent if you're actually getting flipped all these times or if you're pretending to get flipped and really you're just that double agent from the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Essentially. That's sort of interesting too, now that I think about it. You're the only guy who can really know for sure if you've been pretending or if this has actually been flipping each time.
This is probably the conversation that led to the premise of the show Legends with Sean Bean, which had a fantastic premise and an excellent pilot and then was terrible.
The pilot was so good.
Yeah.
You made me watch that pilot and I was like, that was great.
Yeah, but then nothing good happened.
Why don't you give the log line on the show?
So Sean Bean, soon after being beheaded in Game of Thrones, takes on this role as this guy who's an agent for some secret agency in the United States. I'm not exactly sure. And when he assumes an identity, he calls it, it's called the legend instead of like a secret identity. They call it a legend. And ultimately what you find out by the end of the pilot is that he's not sure if he's currently in one of his legends or if he's really himself. He's gotten so far down the psychological hole that he has no idea who his real self is anymore.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. Which is a cool premise.
Yeah. Similarly, I just watched the trailer for Kraven the Hunter, which is a Sony movie that's coming out
Never
soon.
Never heard of it.
He's a Spider-Man villain. It's going to be one of those like Morbius type things.
Okay, great.
And when he's a kid in the trailer, he fights a lion. He's like 14, fights a lion, and the lion kicks the shit out of him. But a little bit of that lion's blood drops into one of his wounds, and guess what?
He's a super lion.
Now he can see things and talk to animals and shit. He Dr. Doolittle's that shit, kind of. And he's a bad guy, though. Bad guy who talks to animals. Now we're talking to
that
animals.
So stupid.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough. They actually do like the slow motion thing of the fucking lion blood dropping into his wound as if that's meaningful. It's like, oh my God.
Like,
it's not even a radioactive lion. It's just a lion.
It's just a different universe, right? Where this is the type of physical properties of blood. Where like,
but apparently no one else knows it in the entire world because no one else is doing this. It's accidental. You know, he's the only one in the world like this. So you can't just drop lion's blood into your blood, or no one knows that you can, and no one's ever had it happen, apparently, in all of human history. Or no one told anyone about it.
I'm not a big superhero movie fan, although there are some that I like.
Yeah.
That is maybe the dumbest premise I've heard.
It's right up there.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you, it's at least right up there.
So like, in this universe, if we lived there and you and I were to each prick our finger and touch blood to each other, would we generate our attributes of ourselves into each other?
I don't know. I haven't watched the movie yet, but maybe... But you could do things like, well, I have a dove, and guess what I'm going to fucking
do? I'm going to fly.
I'm going to fucking slice that dove's throat and cut a little hole in my arm and drop that blood in, and now I'm a fucking dove god, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely what you would do, right?
Right.
You'd have to kill as many doves as possible in the most violent way possible.
Of course. The more violent it is, the better it is.
But, like, that's clearly the only solution to this particular...
I can't believe that that's happening.
I know, dude. It's... wild. It's wild that they're like, oh no, this is totally plausible. They're not even like, it feels like they're not even trying anymore. You know,
at least with Spider-Man, they said there was some special property to the spider.
Exactly. No, it's a special spider. It's fucking radioactive. It bit you. It's never, you can never replicate it, supposedly. Yeah. Now then they find ways to do that, of course. But This actually, so I watched the movie The Flash, right?
Uh-huh.
Why, you know, because I'm an idiot. I don't know. It was fine. It was fine, actually. But so one of the things that happened, you don't care, and I'm just going to spoil for everyone because no one's seen this movie. It's the biggest bomb in the world, and it's not a big deal. And this is only, this is something that happens pretty quickly anyway. So The Flash, whatever, goes back in time, blah, blah, but loses his powers, right? Who cares why he loses his powers, right? And the way he gets his powers originally, although we don't see this in this movie, is he's like working in a crime lab or something, and lightning comes through and strikes him, and there's all these chemicals around, and they all splash onto him, and somehow that makes him The Flash.
Of course.
Fine. It's a science-y explanation, sort of. So he's like, I'm going to replicate this. So he gets all these fucking chemicals and puts them on a little like drawer and gets himself to be struck by lightning, basically, and they all fall on him, and he just is The Flash again. It's like, do you realize what that means for the world?
Yeah.
Like, this is like the end of Star Trek Into Darkness when it's like, oh, well, we can just inject Captain Kirk with this fucking dude with Khan's blood and he'll be fine. And it's like, oh, we just solved death, actually.
Right.
Let's not mention it to anyone or ever bring it up again in any Star Trek thing because what the fuck? You know, it's, they do shit like that. And I'm very much against these things, these easy solves to these problems. Everyone could be The Flash.
It's no problem. Just get some chemicals.
Just get some chemicals and a little bit of fucking sparky spark. You're good.
Yeah. Do not try
stick
that.
A fork in a freaking outlet with chemicals on you. Don't do that either.
don't do it.
Don't do it. I actually did stick a fork into an outlet a few years ago, and it was very bad. I didn't die. You were there, Grant.
I don't remember this.
It was during poker time when we were studying up poker time. That and
oh, yeah.
Those. And it's not that I stuck a fork in. There was, I actually pulled a plug out of an outlet and a little bit of the metal stayed stuck in.
Yeah,
I reached to just pull it out with my fingers without thinking. And I didn't die,
no.
But I sure got jolted. And I was very aware that I got lucky not to be.
Yeah,
I was lucky not to
did
be.
Did a dumb thing.
It yeah, happened. I just did it like without thinking about it. You know, like an instantaneous, like, oh, I'll just pull it out. Like it's like a piece of toast in a toaster that like is going, you know, you couldn't get it. It's like going back down. It's kind of hot and you do it quickly. That is not how that works.
Mm-mm. No, electricity is dangerous.
That would have been such a dumb way to go.
Yep.
My God. I feel like I was really good. That could be a quantum immortality thing, you know?
It could be.
It probably is. Any hoots.
You could still go in a dumb way, you know? That could still happen.
What do you mean? Me?
Yeah.
I feel like I've already gotten that out of my system.
Right. You'll never do anything like that again.
What dumb way could I go? See, you can't even come up with anything.
I'm going to spend a week or two thinking of a lot of scenarios.
Well, give me one right now. One. One scenario.
You go on a hot air balloon ride.
Yeah, I would do that.
And you just kind of fall out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just you're like taking a picture and you fall out.
So here's a thing that actually happened.
Okay.
But I was like, that was dumb. So I was, this is like 3 years ago or something like that. And I was going for regular runs, mm-hmm. like running, you know, 5 days a week or something like that. And my, you know this, my apartment complex has a big gate that like opens and closes.
Yeah.
And the gate, when it, there's actually a sign, which is like, you know, a human getting trapped between the gate,
yeah.
which is like, you will die if this happens. Don't get caught between the gate. So I was running and I was finishing my run and there was a car that went through that gate and I was behind it, like a little bit behind it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm going to make that. Like, it's not a problem. So I was jogging and I got through and it was fine, but it was like a little close. I was like, oh, if I had fallen, I might die.
Yeah.
If I tripped there, I'd fucking die. Like, never do that again.
Right.
You know, I'm like, okay, the good news is I like learned that without having to like feel the pain of it. But also, what the fuck is my problem? I mean, I had a solid, it would have been hard to do, but it was possible. You know, I probably would have had like 4 seconds to like get up and move. So if I hit wrong, if I land wrong, it kills me. You know, it's just like, what the fuck? Why would I do that?
Well, lots of people make those decisions.
I just thought I would just make it. I thought I was going to be fine. And then I was like, but there are ways it's not fine. So that would have been a really dumb way to die too.
There's a lot of people just primed for dumb ways to die.
Yeah.
You know how many morons I see running red lights 3 seconds after it turns on blind intersections like every day? It's like...
Really?
The route, well, the route that I take to your apartment from my house is just... It goes on a Portland surface street that is probably the worst driving in Portland. I don't exactly know why, what's infected the people who are driving on the street, but every red light is run.
Really?
Every time. And I've seen accidents. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. It's idiotic. Anyway... Dan Heimiller and Ron Fesch probably don't do that because they're still around at the ripe old ages of senior event level.
50 plus. And they look older than 50.
Yeah,
plus,
they're definitely older than 50.
Yeah.
This was suggested by SciFighter and Skilder on Discord.
Great.
You can suggest hands on Discord. You can suggest hands on Twitter. If you want to get to our Discord and you don't know how, just use the link in the description of this podcast that will take you there. Discord might seem like a scary place at first, but just get in there and you'll have a good time.
That's what he said, and he's right.
That is what I said. Thanks for saying that part.
I'm backing you up. This is me supporting you. Okay. It's either that or I pull your nail off the finger because you got the thing wrong.
So Fesh is a likely amateur, right?
Yeah, I would say he's a likely amateur. Here's some information on Ron Fesh.
Okay.
Okay. He lives in Grand Forks, New Orleans.
Okay.
So there's something. His Hendon starts in 2017, and coming into this event, he has about a little under $200,000.
Okay.
So it's not awful, but I will say, notably, no like really big scores of any kind in the 200,000.
So he might just really play a lot?
It feels like he plays a lot. He's had, you know, a few wins, but even his wins are like 10x the buy-in kind of a win. So like very few people played kind of a thing. It's not a terrible resume, but it doesn't have, but he could very easily be in the red here coming into this event. Right. Easily.
Dan Heimeller is just an old school pro who's been around since well before the Moneymaker era.
His Hendon Mob goes on for a while and it starts in 1992.
Yeah, he's been around. He's one of those. He looks like an old school pro too. He's just got that vibe. Maybe I'm wrong about, or not wrong, but maybe my assumption isn't correct. He looks like a mixed game guy. He just looks like a mixed game guy, doesn't he? Like he.
I know what you mean. He's sort of known, at least in the old days, as being sort of like a little crazy poker wise, like out there with some of his decisions and stuff like that. I don't know if that's still the case. It's been so long. I have a friend of mine who's played at final tables, like big final tables with him in the past anyway. He's the guy. He can just show up with some weirder stuff. Mm. But again, this is like 15 years ago. I don't know if that's still true.
Well, he's still around, still doing it.
And yeah, good for him.
Deep in the seniors event, there's 9 remaining.
But there's a question which you have not answered.
Yeah, so this is going to be very hard
for
me.
You're really dodging it, man. You didn't even want to go
there. Dan Heimeller is going to be one of the harder Hendons I've done.
I got it right here. And we're going to do it, of course, pre this event, because I'm super cool. What is Dan Heimeller's Hendon?
Man, it could be so many things.
What is Dan Heimeller's Hendon?
I mean, I know it's definitely in the millions. I guess I don't know, but it seems pretty obvious. I'm going to go $4.5 million.
It's not a terrible guess. It's $6.5 million.
Okay.
So not awful, but not amazing.
What's his biggest score?
I am looking for that. It's $627,000. So this might be like a big WPT finish. I'm still looking. There's so many. His Hendon goes on for so long. It's just a slow, long scroll to find any of these things. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still looking for a six-figure score that isn't going to be... Here's... In 2016, he won almost $250,000 playing a 5K. Not bad.
He's just a classic grinder, this guy.
I think that may be somewhat true with a little psychosis to him, in a good way, by the way. I don't know. Man, it's going to take me forever to find this big... Oh, I found it. He won the seniors event at the World Series of Poker in 2014 for $627,000.
Oh. Cool.
There you go.
So he's at least 59.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Back then, the seniors event was event 17. Now it's 48.
Well, how many events do they have now? I mean, not including on... Do they include the online events in the same numbering system?
No, I don't think they do.
Different numbering system? Yeah.
But how many events are there just live?
75 now, maybe?
Yeah, I remember when I first started, they were like at 50, and it was a big deal that people were like, this is so many. I mean, they just keep adding and adding. Yeah. You know, once again, driving down the value of a bracelet.
Right.
But bracelets are dumb anyway. It's just a fucking tournament. Like, yeah. I mean, there's prestige, but it's dumb prestige.
I would hate to win one mostly because of the money that goes along with it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm much more interested in the money than the bracelet.
For sure. So is Dan Heimeller probably, because he's the old school grinder.
And he's got a bracelet.
Yeah. Anyway, as we analyze this hand, I'm probably going to treat it like Heimeller is the pro and Fesh is an amateur. I'm going to try to, you know, look at it from first principles as best as I can, but you know, it's kind of coloring my thought process.
It seems correct based on what we know about these guys. We also get to watch this hand play out. And
right.
So there's other reasons why.
I mean,
I think I can
justify a few of the Fesh decisions. I think I can find ways. I just don't know if it's going to be good enough.
Well, I'm excited to get into it.
All right.
So there's nine left, right?
Nine left. What are the payouts here?
Yeah, here we go. So 8,180 players entered this $1,000 buy-in event. Prize pool of almost $7.3 million. Everyone has already locked up $75,000. First place, $765,000.
So absurd.
But so much more money to be won. ICM does matter here a lot.
Matters hugely.
Yeah. You can 10X this thing. Just get through eight more players. It's wild.
All right, so a woman with the last name Fahey.
Shannon.
Shannon Fahey is going to open the action here. She's going to be the garbage human, so we don't care that much about her. She's got $14.5 million at the 500K big blind.
Okay.
Opens ace-jack of hearts under the gun to $1.2 million. Fine.
Yeah.
No problems there. High Miller is plus two, and he's got queens. He's got two red queens. Is red queens, right? Because I didn't actually write it down.
I mean, I'll look while you keep talking.
Okay. So, Heimler's got 24 million, so he's got about 50 blinds. Fahey, who opened, has about... Heimler has 50 blinds. Fahey has 30 blinds.
He also does have two red queens.
Okay. He has two red queens. You're okay with getting it in against the under-the-gun range for 30 blinds effective with queens, right?
30 blinds, you have to.
Yeah.
Unless they're the tightest players of all time, you just have to go with queens here.
So three betting seems like the obvious play unless there's a shove stack behind who you think is likely to shove, and then you can reshove unless things get weird. If there's a reshove and then Fahey reshoves, you probably have to go with it still.
It depends on what you think about the players and all that. There's more to think about.
It's probably just easier to...
Probably you just go with it mostly. Yeah. Mostly.
Things are probably easier if you just three bet in most cases.
Yeah, I think we just three bet.
Which is what Heimler does. He makes it 3.2 million over the 1.2 from plus two. No problems there, right?
3.2 over 1.2?
Yeah, it's like a little small, but it's with
totally fine. And I will say that I watched a little bit of this and I noticed that small three bets were working extremely well. Which is interesting in the seniors. I would think that they wouldn't be, but maybe everyone's a little tighter or something like that.
Well, when the effective stack is 30 blinds, you can also three bet smaller.
That's correct. But some people don't know that. You know, some people will call anyway because of the price.
Yeah.
Sometimes that person is me. But this stuff was working no problem going to 3.2 from 1.2 type of thing.
Folds around to the big blind, who is Ron Fesch.
Okay.
He's got 31.3 million, so he's got over 60 bigs.
Yep.
He's got ace, king of spades.
Oh, man.
What an interesting spot, right?
Under the gun opens. There's a three from plus two, and here we are in the big blind.
And we're nine-handed. It's not like we're five-handed.
And while Fahey is 30 blinds effective or so, Heimler, though, has 24 million in change.
Almost 50 bigs.
Yeah, almost 50 bigs. And we have that covered, but not by a huge amount. So, we have to think about this.
Could we four bet fold to Heimler? It seems absurd.
It seems a little crazy to do that for under 50 blinds, right?
Yeah.
Should we just be looking to get it in and just not worry about it because the blinds are so small? Or should we be respectful of the fact that under the gun fucking open got raised? Like, there's a lot of stuff about here.
This is a very strong range from Heimler.
Yeah, he's got a very good hand here most of the time.
Like, we're not doing great against the get-it-in range.
I agree. We might be chopping, and we might be flipping.
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine. We can never get in against ace-queen. Heimler's never getting in with ace-queen against us, right?
We get to just win against ace-queen, though.
I mean, that's cool. Nice.
We get to jacks. I don't know what jacks does if we make it, $7.5 million, which is really small. I'm just trying to leave some room.
They probably just fold, honestly. Yeah. I think they just fold. They're like, it's not worth it. Like, it's such a strong play when under the gun opens, and then you three bet. Right? Jacks are just going to fold.
Probably.
Again, depending on who the opponents are, but in the seniors event, that's probably a successful fold, I would think. Now, there is $5.5 million just sitting there in the middle. So if we four bet and just everyone folds, that's still a pretty good pickup. That's 11 blinds we just get.
Yeah.
That's fine. Okay, let's explore all our options. We can't fold, right?
No, we cannot. It's suited. I mean, maybe we could consider folding unsuited. Maybe.
We can't just throw our hand away. It's only 6.5 blinds right now.
Yeah.
We've got, 60 some odd blinds. It's fine to call. Even if we end up blowing off this hand pre-flop, because we call under the gun, re-raises, Dan, they get it all in.
We just get away.
We fold and we lost 6.5 blinds. It's fine. Is calling better than raising because it doesn't reopen the action for Dan, at least?
Yeah, that's nice. That is nice. Unless, of course, Fahey moves in, but then we have an easy decision. If If Highmiller
Highmiller folds, we call.
We call, and if Highmiller moves in, we fold.
If Highmiller flats, I guess we have to call and then figure it out, right?
Hope to flop the nut flush.
Yeah. We're going to have to call if he flats. The price is going to be outrageous, right? It's $11 million to win like 36, and we're closing the action with ace-king suited. We just have to call.
It's just a major hit to our stack where we don't get to showdown very often.
It's a very dangerous spot, but yeah. I just don't think we can ever fold at that point, right?
I don't know. That's tough.
We can also figure that out then.
This is a tricky spot. I think flatting is probably my preference.
Yeah. People are going to put you on like jacks anyway and not ace-king suited mostly, right?
I mean, obviously it doesn't matter in a huge field where you're not playing multiple iterations, but if you were trying to play balance, you'd have to be flatting aces sometimes too, which is not a terrible play when Fahey's sitting there with 30 bigs and under the gun opening might just shove.
Okay. Let's be clear. While we'd want to flat this a reasonable percentage of the time, and maybe even the majority of the time, we definitely can't flat this always, right? We definitely need to have this be some of our four-betting range, too, right? Because what else are we four-betting?
Really? It's tough to find four-bets against this action.
Right. So this is a pretty good hand to do it with.
Yeah.
Like, one, if called, we can flop really well. We can flop well enough that we're comfortable. Two, we block. We have an ace and a king in our hand that's as good as it gets for blockers, right?
Yeah.
It's way better than ace-five suited. way better. And we don't mind getting it against just Fahey. So if we put in the four bet, she shoves, Dan folds, we can call.
Yeah.
It's a strong range, but like whatever. Like we're not folding then, right? It's we'll have a very straightforward if Dan shoves on us, we're gonna have to let it go, I think, right? We can make it like 7 million or something, maybe 7.5, and just fold to his shove of 24. God, it feels horrible that.
It feels awful.
We're getting such a good price. We're putting in a bunch of his stack and then to fold a hand this strong, but at best, you're chopping, right?
Yeah.
You might win a flip against queens. That's like our best case scenario is like it's chopping or queens, though. So I guess we just have to fold he might fold queens anyway if we put in this raise. I don't think so.
He might flat queens if we make it 7.5.
Yeah, he might just, he probably.
Which is a fine result.
Yeah.
You can play some post-flop poker.
And we're like, I hope he's not, I mean, it's hard for him to have aces and kings because I block it and he's less likely to flat with those hands, but it's not impossible, of course.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So, yeah, I think we should do that sometimes. I think flatting is the path of least resistance.
So much easier and so much cheaper.
But as I said, you should flat aces here sometimes too, which is actually not a bad exploit play against this scenario.
I've actually done this almost this exact thing in a World Series event. It was like midday two in some 1500. Under the gun open and had like 12 blinds, but open like min raise. And the small blind three bet and had a lot of chips. And I had a lot of chips in the big blind and had aces and like flatted.
Yeah, hoping for the reshove so the action reopens.
I felt the under the gun player was going to move in. Like, oh, I could just feel his energy. He was moving in. Yeah. So I flatted. He moved in. The other guy thought tanked forever and folded jacks.
Ah, that sucks.
Well, it was great because the jack flopped. Oh. He was super upset and I won a huge pot. Well, not a huge pot, but I won a pot that I would have lost most of my chips. And instead I got to win not a huge pot, but like a 20 blind pot or something like, well, not 20, but you know, like a reasonable pot, whatever it was. It was cool. Yeah. It's so funny too, because I was like, go all, when the first guy, the undergun guy goes all in and the other guy's tanking and tanking and tanking with his two jacks. I'm thinking, go all in, go all in. Go all in. Or even just call. All of it's good.
Yeah.
All of it's good.
Just put chips in the middle.
And he found the fold. And it was very impressive, really, you know?
Yeah.
He was like, you just have to have it, man. I was like, yeah.
I experienced a little bit of the feeling where you really know you have it. Like, obviously with aces preflop. But, you know, when you know you have the best hand almost for sure. And you've made a bet. I experienced this when I played the monster stack recently. Multiple times. And by the time it was like, the decision was about to be made by my opponent. It was clear that I had the superior hand.
Yeah.
And it was just like that feeling of like, please, 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 please just call.
Yeah.
Just put the chips in. And then they fold. And it happened both times. And I was like, did I fuck that up? did I bet too much? What happened?
Yeah.
You know that feeling.
I do.
Yeah. But it's a much better feeling than the please fold, please fold, please fold. I'm bluffing. Please fold, please fold, please fold.
Yeah.
It's like there can only be more, right?
The free roll spot is so much better than the this could suck spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Fetch ends up calling with the ace-king of spades out of the big blind.
I got no problems there.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
It's a weird spot.
He flats the $3.2 million with the ace-king of spades. Fahey makes the fold, which I think with her 30-blind stack is pretty necessary.
It's interesting.
Like, what is she hoping to happen, right? She has to flop, like, a combo draw to feel like going with it unless she flops the nut flush or three jacks.
It's a weird spot, granted, but let's just take a moment here, right? There is 6, 7.6... there's like $8.5 million in there, and it's $2 million to close the action.
Yeah, but
you have ace jack suited.
She's just going with it on an ace high or jack.
I don't know.
Flat.
That is why I think she ultimately folds, is because it's such a problematic spot there, right? And what the fuck does Fetch have?
Right.
That he's flatting there, like,
I mean, what does Highmiller have?
Even? Right.
You know,
right.
Like I think I like the fold. I think it's a good fold.
I think I like it too, but wow. Like, man, we're getting such a good price. We're getting such an insane price. We're getting like 4 to 1 to just see a flop.
Right, but the $2 million is more valuable to her than it is to a bigger stack.
Right.
You know, that's a valuable amount of chips there. And it also is like, if you make the decision to call and the action isn't just absurd and it's a jack 4-3 flop, you just have to go with it.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose a lot on a jack 4-3 flop.
I wonder if Fesh folds, if she's flatting or if she's folding now. Liz, it's really different, obviously.
It is different.
It depends, I guess, how much Heimuller's been 3-betting.
Yeah, which I would guess might be a fair amount.
We may not even flat. We could also move in with this hand, by the way.
Oof. That feels like a punt. Feels super punty.
Because we opened under the gun and you 3-bet us. Yeah. I actually, you know, just thinking about that part of it makes me want to fold anyway. Like,
yeah.
We open under the gun, he 3-bets. Unless he's 3-betting a lot, we should just fold our fucking.
I mean, I think ace-jack off is a pretty clear fold initially under the gun.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even open it.
Of course it is, of course.
Right, so ace-jack suited is like 3% better in an all-in scenario than ace-jack off. I think it's still worth folding to a 3-bet when you open under the gun.
Right, the difference is that you just have a lot more continues on flops and turns. You have a lot more things that work for you.
Yeah, you can check shove a lot more boards, but Heimuller has way more calls than he normally would.
Also, like, it's not great when we're this short to have a lot more continues anyway.
Yeah.
You kind of want, like, fitter fold spots, not like, oh, I can keep going because I sort of flop something. Like,
right.
That's not good when you have 29 blinds, right? Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I like the fold.
Me too.
He folds.
Good job.
So we're heads up. Queens against Ace King, it's the classic. And that's what they call nitro betting, the classic. It's like a submarine sandwich with meat and vegetables on it. It's classic.
It's got the lettuce and the vinegar.
And it's got the pig parts.
I mean, depending on your background.
Okay. The pig parts mixed with dirt and boots and stuff. Depends on where you get it from.
Yeah.
But it's the classic. It's nitro betting.
It's you have to go there and you have to participate.
Right.
That's the deal.
You listened, and if you read the fine print, listening to this podcast requires you to use the link in the description to sign up for Nitro Betting to get access to all of the cool promotions they do for just our people, along with the Poker Guys monthly tournament.
Yeah.
It's the classic.
This isn't a threat, to be clear.
No, it's not a threat.
But there would be legal repercussions if you don't do what we're saying.
Right.
Clearly.
Yeah.
And but it's not a threat.
And you have to deposit a lot of Bitcoin on there, too.
You have to. And, you know, then do whatever
happens.
And
gamble. You know?
Gamble it up. Yeah, you have to do that, though. That's the deal. This isn't begging.
No, this is just a statement of fact.
This is us laying out what is real.
It's the truth.
We are giving it 100.
Like, you get... Who here... Raise your hand.
Yeah.
Who here has seen The Gray?
I'm raising my hand.
Featuring Liam Neeson.
I'm raising my hand.
You know, the beginning of the movie when the plane crashes
and the guy's
definitely going to die.
Yeah.
And Liam Neeson kind of talks him through dying. Yeah. That's a great scene.
Yeah. Is that a move he's making?
No, he's not. He's not trying to manipulate the guy. He's just telling him the state of the situation. So that's you. You're the guy
and we're
who
Liam
has
Neeson.
No chance to live.
You're going to die.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
That's the theme of what Liam Neeson tells him. He's like, you're going to die. It's okay. It happens.
Like, it's not going to bother me at all.
And that's the deal for you in the nitro betting and the link.
Yeah.
So use the link.
Good.
You're going to use the link.
You have to use
it. It's going to be okay.
Again, you don't have to, but there will be severe and painful physical and legal repercussions. So know that. Just know that.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. Either way. We don't care. We're indifferent to whether you use it.
No,
to be clear, it's not our problem. It's your problem.
We don't give a shit at all.
It's entirely your problem.
We are just laying out the situation for you. Okay, anyway.
And that's another ad brought to you by Nitro Betting.
Yeah. 8.35 million chips in the pot.
Okay.
Heimuller is the initial 3-better. He's got 2 red queens. He's the effective stack. He started the hand with 24 million.
Okay.
Ace, king of spades for Fesh, out of position, in the big blind. 7 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds, 3 of clubs. It's a terrible flop for Fesh. It is no good. He's got no prospects.
Right.
No hope. There's no way out of this hole.
This is not what we were looking for. Not even a single spade, Grant. Not even no back doors, Grant.
So Heimuller, from Fesh's perspective, depending on how wide his three bets are, I don't know,
yeah.
can have like ace queen
yeah.
plus probably.
I would think so.
Maybe jacks plus he might three bet tens.
Like I think
under
he
the gun, 30 blinds, you're a little afraid.
He can have tens.
Yeah, maybe tens.
He could three bet fold tens even. You know, he doesn't have to put it all in with tens against the under the gun player.
Yeah. But he's got a lot of overpairs.
And, oh yeah.
And of the ace queen and ace kings that he has some nut flush draws. You know, two
for
of those
sure. Well, we don't have any diamonds in our hand. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah.
Or clubs.
So as Fesh, we should recognize immediately that whether or not it's true overall in this scenario when we have ace king of spades, Highmiller is crushing us range wise.
Yeah.
And probably from a theoretical perspective too, he's crushing us range wise. We probably don't have any sets and neither does he, right? Most likely.
Probably not. I think Highmiller can, if someone can have him, probably Highmiller can.
If right? somebody can have a set, but it seems unlikely.
It seems like they're just not deep enough for Fetch to ever flat like sevens or eights here, right?
Right.
Like pre.
And it's
they're just not deep enough.
And the under the gun 30 blind
right.
player just, open, so Highmiller probably doesn't have those either.
I don't think he does. Yeah, I think you're right. And he could have just flatted with sevens or eights.
Yeah.
Very comfortably if he wanted to. Yeah. So no one has it.
Right.
No one has that. So it's overpairs, diamond draws are kind
of
nothing.
Right. So cool. Fesh should be afraid of Heimler's range. Heimler should be a little bit of Fesh's range if he knows nothing about Fesh. If they have history, it's possible that Heimler may know that Fesh would always four bet kings or aces in that spot. Who knows?
I mean, fair, but at some point you're also like, I mean, you know, sometimes you just get fucked
right.
in poker, and this may be one of those spots.
I mean, you just, if you're Heimler, you just hope that Fesh has jacks or tens or
yeah.
ace king of diamonds, which is not as good.
You don't really want him to have ace king.
You don't want him to, but you'd rather him have that than aces or kings.
Right. Of course. Of
yeah.
course. But like jacks would be great. Can
yeah.
we order jacks, please?
Yeah.
Jacks is really on the menu too. Cause like he may not even have ace queen of diamonds here. He probably doesn't. So it's like ace king of diamonds.
Well,
exactly.
He can't.
Oh, right. We've got the queen of diamonds. Oh, yeah. Great. So it's exactly ace king of diamonds, which is a flip essentially, or hands were crushing.
Yeah.
That's a great, I guess, and maybe you can have a tiny bit of aces and kings, although it seems unlikely. But maybe, because
yeah.
I did that time, so who knows. Fine. I think it's one of those, from Heimler's point of view, as we're planning this, you know, to bet here, it's a so be it if he has me, so be it if he gets there, whatever. We're completely going with this hand on this flop, and that's that.
Which is demonstrative of the absurd variance that's present in huge multi-table poker tournaments.
Yes.
Like, how many scenarios like this are you going to run into where you just have to say, like, I have to go with this?
Right.
You know, and it's like in every one of those scenarios, let's say there's a 25% chance it's the end of your tournament.
Right.
You run into a lot of those scenarios, you're eventually going to lose one unless you're just running really hot.
And right, and it doesn't just have to be that they have aces or kings or they have ace, king of diamonds. They could have jacks and just beat you anyway, which
right.
happens, of course.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to win these things is
yeah.
the point, yeah.
Of course it is. Anyway, Highmiller is going to bet after Fesh checks.
Good.
He bets $4 million into 8.35, which is maybe a bit big, but I think he's trying to just like encourage Fesh to get it in with hands like jacks and tens.
Exactly. I'm sure that's what it is. He's like, let's just go. I don't want to give you any chance at all to just decide it to call and see a card, take a card off or something like that.
Yeah. Well, Fesh calls to take a card off.
Why would he do it with ace-king of spades on a 7-diamond, 8-diamond, 3 club board?
I mean, even if there was a spade out there, I don't think SPR is deep enough to float with ace king of spades.
I don't think it is either. Now, with just if there's a three of spades instead of three of clubs.
If Highmiller had bet $2.5 million, maybe,
right.
and there is a spade. But even if Highmiller had bet $2.5 million on this board, I think ace king of spades is a fold.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I think
you are right. I think it is just a fold. You just move on. If there was a single spade on there, and maybe we like two back doors is so much better than one. Right? Like, there's just so many other things that could work for us here.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. That's what yeah. I'm trying to say.
Fesh calls. We don't like it.
It's bad.
Yeah. It's just...
I think it's just bad.
It might be entitlement tilt. Not entirely sure.
Maybe... Okay. The only way you could just... If Jason Kuhn was here and played this hand this way and called here, we would say, clearly Highmiller is c-betting way too much and also must have, like, a very wide 3-betting range, but then why didn't Kuhn 4-bet? These things don't go together
no.
is the thing, right? Like... It's got to be one or the other. Either Highmuller's strong enough that you don't want to put in the 4-bet, or Highmuller's... But that means he's so strong that you shouldn't be calling here.
I mean,
right?
The most likely scenario is that Fesh has entitlement tilt, which is something that a lot of people suffer from, which is like simply, I had a good hand at one point and things didn't work out for me. I'm going to continue putting chips in anyway because I had hoped to win the hand more than usual because I had a good hand.
Right.
You know? But sometimes you just lose, right? It's just two cards. You get two cards and sometimes they don't work out.
I mean, they often don't work out.
Yeah. And once you realize that, it really makes you better at poker. Like, you don't have to have each hand work out for you the way you want it to.
Totally.
So Fesh calls. It feels like a clear mistake.
Yep.
The turn is the eight of clubs. It pairs the eights. So it's now eight of diamonds, seven of diamonds, three of clubs, eight of clubs. Backdoor clubs are now available, although very unlikely. I suppose Fesh could have ace-king of clubs. He has ace-king of spades. So this is where I think Fesh may have studied a little bit, but doesn't know where to apply it.
Yeah.
Because he's going to lead for $5 million.
Such a weird card to lead on.
Now,
considering the situation.
I could see how this could be working in his brain if he's studied some but isn't really used to applying it universally.
Right.
Where if Highmiller had just been the opener, if Fahey wasn't part of the hand.
And we were in the big blind, we called, then we check, called the flop. This is a great lead.
This is like if we had a draw or anything that we continued with, we have more eights than Highmiller, we're supposed to lead.
Yep.
But as we laid out before, in this scenario, neither of us has any eights. It doesn't matter. This is not a range advantage card for us. Highmiller still has a range advantage. We should not lead this card.
1,000,000%.
There's no reason to...
It makes no sense at all what we're doing. Would we ever... By the way, would we lead if we had aces or kings?
Seems pretty unlikely.
Seems incredibly unlikely.
Yeah.
But I don't think Highmiller's too worried about that anyway, but even like it feels like we just even knocked those even more out of the range if there was any of them in there.
If I were Highmiller, I would be thinking that Fesh likely has... Tens or jacks.
I would think tens, yeah.
Saw a safe card and wanted to like protect his equity against ace king and ace queen.
For some reason it feels exactly like tens to me the way he's playing this instead of jacks.
Of course it is ace king, but
yeah. You know. But I'm just saying, like that's if I was playing this guy, I'd be like, he's got two tens.
Right. So Highmiller is gonna race, which I think is interesting. I think if you really put this guy on a hand like tens or jacks, is raising the right play?
Yeah, I want to talk about that. So the reason why it would be the right play. There's two reasons actually. One is if you think this guy can't get away from it.
Yeah.
Which is only going to be based on history. The other reason to consider doing it is because there are a lot of action killing cards if he's got jacks or tens.
Any diamond.
Any ace, any king, any queen. Maybe not really straightening cards. That isn't going to matter, right?
No, it's not.
So it's any diamond and any big over card.
Yeah.
Which is, it's like 40% of the deck or something like that, right? 30% of the deck. Give or take. I haven't done the numbers on that, but
it's
whatever.
It's not insignificant.
But the truth is, like, a lot of the time, a safe-ish card is going to come off, and we could get it all in. Right. We might be able to get it all in anyway. The other thing is, of course, Fesh could have ace-king of diamonds here.
Yes,
and we could charge him for... We could make it so he doesn't get to set his price.
Yeah.
Which would be the other reason to raise.
Yeah.
So what do you think is better, ultimately? The raise or the call?
This is such a player-dependent thing.
Yes.
If Fesh is the type of guy who's going to go with jacks or tens against a raise, and spoiler alert, he almost definitely is, I think the raise is the right play.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want the scary card to ruin your shit.
Yeah. I think that's probably right. Also, some weird cards could come off which fuck us, of course. And the pot is significant already.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying we're doing this just to protect our equity. I don't think that's a good enough reason to raise. I think we need to take more into account than that, but it should be a factor. Because the pot is big now.
Well, do you think there is any reason, and if there is, I'd like to know it, that Highmiller raises to $13 million out of a $17 million chip stack?
I wouldn't have thought so, except that I know what happens.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't have thought there could be any reason at all to do this. Like, you wouldn't raise to $13 million with the intention of folding on this board in this situation, right? We're not protecting our $4 million. Does it make it look... Like, are we going to trick him in because the words all in aren't said that he's more apt to call?
That's actually where I go. Like, if we think Fesh is kind of an amateur, there's so much going on. There's the lights. The stacks are, you know, such that you can't really tell how much by looking at them unless they're stacked really well. And I'm not saying Highmiller is, like, hiding his chips or something. But if Highmiller says raise to $13 million and puts it out and there's still chips behind and Fesh is, like, in the moment, not, like, really observing things, he might not realize that Highmiller only has $4 million behind.
Huh.
He might like, and that in that way, it makes it different than all in.
Right. Interesting. That's the only good reason I can have to do it. My inclination would have just been to move in if I'm raising and not really think anything of it, you know?
Yeah, but this might be better for those exploitative reasons.
Well, I mean, I think Heimuller is on top of that
and
is thinking about all that stuff, quite frankly. And maybe part of it is that he knows his opponent and he knows these fields and he knows that 13 and without the word all. The word all in is scares people.
Yep.
And the word and the not all in is just a bet.
I honestly believe that this is what did it. It actually worked because Fetch moves in.
For $4 million more. I think we need to say it again. Heimuller raises to $13 million. Fetch moves in for $17 total with ace king high. What the living hell is he doing? He lead shoves. Is this the play?
We must seek to understand.
Okay.
So let's lay out the scenario and then let's seek to understand.
There's only, okay, go ahead.
He's giving Heimuller a price of $4 million to win $50 million.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe it's $4 million to win 46, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a pretty good price. It's a pretty fine price. What could be happening? Well, if Fesch did not really take a second to look at how much Heimuller had back, which is, of course, on Fesch, that's his job to figure that
out. Of course.
He may think that in his world, like, Heimuller is not supposed to be comfortable on this card because this is supposed to be my card from my theory land where I'm in the big blind.
How could he ever raise me?
I have more eights than he does, whereas in reality, they neither of them have any.
I mean, yeah, but this guy just got through 8,000 players. He can't put that together.
You've seen Jerry Yang?
I have. That was a long time ago.
Jonathan.
I'm just saying, 8,000 players. 8,171 players.
Just because he does some things wrong doesn't mean he does everything wrong.
Yeah.
Like there's probably some things he did well that got him here, right?
Also, it's possible this is like the biggest moment of his poker career, or one of them at least. And
seems likely
he's really focused on certain things, and he might miss a thing or two, right? And like he's just caught up in the moment.
I think this might all be born of him missing the scenario being different than a typical opener versus big blind scenario.
Yeah. The thing that's interesting is even if he's off about how much chips Heimuller has behind, Fetch himself only has 10 million more, sorry, 7 million more than Heimuller anyway. So it would only be, it wouldn't even be a clickback race.
Right.
Well, I guess it would be technically. But you know what I mean? Heimuller would have made it 13 million. The all in would be for 24. It still is giving him, for your all in, even if you thought Heimuller had you covered, is still giving him an outrageous price.
Here's my defense of Fetch's thought process.
Okay.
If I were to give him the most credit possible. All right. He thinks it's less likely that Heimuller would raise the turn with an overpair than a flush draw.
Right.
He unblocks all of the flush draws that Heimuller can have, which might just be two.
Yep.
But still, those make sense. So
it might be three.
Yeah. So he's doing okay against that range if Heimuller is weighted more towards flush draws. He's not doing great against that range, but he's doing okay.
Right. I mean, no, he's doing... The problem, of course, is every time Heimuller has the flush draw, but it's ace, king, of diamonds, he's just free-rolling you, and it's a disaster.
And the other problem is when he has overpairs.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, of course, even ace, queen, ace, jack of diamonds have some reasonable-ish equity against you. Not amazing, but they're like 26% anyway. So even in your best-case scenario, it's like 74-26 or something, you know? And sometimes you're crushed, and sometimes you're getting free-rolled.
I mean, that's the best I can do for Fesh as far as thought process.
I think...
Do you have any alternative ideas as to why he did this?
I don't believe this is the case, but I'm going to just walk down this path for a moment anyway. Okay. I want to be open to the fact, just for a second, that he's doing the play. And what would the play be in this case? The play would be that he doesn't believe... He believes Heimuller is crazier than we're saying.
Yeah, okay.
So Heimuller's three betting a wider range, and when we lead this card, Heimuller doesn't believe us, and so he's raising way more hands than he should be here. And he just can have all sorts of shit.
I mean, yeah, that's enough to make it reasonable.
Heimuller can just have like king queen here,
right?
And so we can just move in and win. And we obviously can't call. We don't think the raise. So, but we move in. He's just going to snap fold. We take it down, and we're a fucking god.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's really happening. That feels like too much. But that would be that's not really the play because the play is designed to actually get someone to fold a better hand than you. Of course, I don't think we can ever get Heimuller to fold a better hand than us.
No,
ever in this case, right?
No.
I mean, if Heimuller has two fives, he's I guess he's folding that, but is he ever going to play it like this? No.
No. I think, so we've given the generous explanations. I think the Occam's razor most likely explanation is entitlement tilt.
I'm entitlement tilt along with you're on a flush draw.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he must believe the guy's on a flush draw.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfair to think like, oh, I'm going to get him to fold two queens and blah, blah. I don't think he's thinking
entitlement tilt plus really wanting to put the guy on a worse hand than you, which you see all the time when you play. Like they put you on whatever hand they can beat because they want to make the call.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there.
Yeah. And sometimes they're right and it sucks.
Of course.
Yeah.
But that's, yeah, that's a thing. So yeah, so he's going to move in for $4 million more. Okay. That's crazy. So here we are with Dan Heimuller. We have two queens.
He snaps.
Of course you snap. You're getting 11.5 to 1, and this guy's story makes no fucking sense.
Right. There's a world where he has aces or kings, and so be it. You know, we were going to go bust anyway.
There might be a world where this guy has pocket sevens, I guess, or ace eight too, but whatever.
It's worth finding out versus having eight blinds remaining and folding.
Right? If we win this pot, we're going to be the big chip leader in this tournament, right?
That is what happens when the queen hits the river.
Yeah. By the way, we're talking about all this stuff. Like, you can play all these things right. Even when we get it in, Heimuller's like 88%. You know, he's not, he doesn't win. He just wins most of the time. Like, sometimes Fetch is going to river a king and just win this monster pot. Heimuller's going to be out, and that's going to be that.
Yep.
I mean, it's messed up, man.
But he holds.
He holds.
Queen of clubs, I think, on the river, and that's a good, he makes a full house.
Definitely a black queen of some sort.
Well, of course.
Because the black Mariah.
Sure. Sure. Anyway. That was how Heimuller got the chip lead. He ended up going out in third.
Third place, that's correct. I was going to call you Dan because his name is Dan, and that's the thing I do a lot. He ended up finishing third for $356,000. You're probably wondering what happened to Ron Fesch.
Yeah, what happened to Ron Fesch?
Oh, I'll tell you. He did not finish ninth, Grant.
Okay.
He leveled up one ladder spot to eighth place in $95,000.
Anyway. Still a good score.
Not bad at all. Billy Baxter, famous guy in the original Doyle book.
Yeah.
Finished second for $473,000. And that's it for people we've heard of.
Cool.
Congrats, everyone.
Seniors.
Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. 90s baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates. I'm the rapper most likely to